The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The goal of this path of practice that the Buddha discovered is a freedom that he called, among many other things, the unexcelled state of sublime peace, the supreme security from bondage, which is the freedom from the bondage of craving and clinging. These habits of mind, craving and clinging, are trying to find happiness and security, yet in ways that are actually only creating stress and suffering and dissatisfaction. All these attempts to crave various kinds of sensual pleasures, craving to be this or that, craving to not be this or that, various forms of existence, becoming. The Buddha discovered one of his central understandings was that this very craving that is the uninformed mind's attempt at happiness is actually the cause of our suffering, our unhappiness, our stress. The deluded or craving mind typically cannot fathom a happiness or a peace or a security that lies outside of getting what it craves, getting those pleasant experiences or avoiding those unpleasant experiences that it is craving to be separated from. Because there is this underlying distortion or delusion in that craving that believes that pleasant experiences, whether of body or mind, pleasant sights or sounds, smells, tastes, body sensations, even our identities, our ideas about ourselves, about the world, pleasant states of mind, even the beautiful states of concentration, that all experiences of this nature are the source of happiness. That's the view, the underlying distortion behind craving. And the Dhamma invites us into this really radical movement of, instead of just keeping our attention and focus on getting what it is that our craving is seeking, whether money or relationships, status, pleasant experiences of any kind, to instead turn the attention towards this craving mind itself, and to start to understand, to really see directly that that craving is the very source of our dissatisfaction and our suffering. The Buddha, in his awakening, understood that craving arises due to specific causes and conditions. And those causes and conditions, through this path of practice that he laid out, can be completely uprooted. Craving can be brought to a complete end. And this is the third You probably have heard of the Four Noble Truths, the central teaching of Buddhism. The third of these Four Noble Truths is there is this reality of the cessation of suffering, the complete ending of suffering, and that arises through the cessation of craving. And so all of the practices, the teachings that the Buddha offered over his 45 years of teaching after his awakening, all of these teachings are aimed at this goal of the complete end of stress and suffering by removing the conditions that give rise to the craving that causes it. And central to the ways that craving is uprooted into the qualities that are developed in the practice that undercut the arising of craving and give rise to freedom from stress, freedom from suffering, are the qualities of wisdom or knowledge or understanding, and the qualities of disenchantment and dispassion that they give rise to. And the cultivation of wisdom and understanding and the disenchantment that comes from that, it has many facets. There are many forms, there are many practices that support the development of wisdom or understanding. And one of the most frequent themes throughout the Buddha's teachings is the cultivation of directly knowing and seeing what are often referred to as the three characteristics. These three are, I'll give the Pali words and the translations to English. Anicca, which translates to inconstancy or impermanence. Dukkha, which translates to stress or unreliability, unsatisfactoriness. And third, anatta, not self or essencelessness or insubstantiality. Ungovernability. These are all ways of understanding this quality. And so these in later traditions in the commentarial tradition have been called the three characteristics, but the Buddha simply referred to them as perceptions that are to be cultivated, understandings or ways of seeing that we are to apply and align with in our practice. And so through awareness and contemplation in our direct experience, we practice with attuning our minds, our perception to this truth of inconstancy, unreliability, and essencelessness in all aspects of our experience. This isn't something that we just see once and then we check the box that we know that. We need to see it again and again and again to continue to reinforce and strengthen this understanding and the perception that all things, everything in our direct experience, everything in our experience is inconstant. It's impermanent. It's not able to be a lasting source of satisfaction because it's constantly coming and going. And that arising and passing is out of our control. It's ungovernable. Therefore, it's clearly nothing in our experience is fit to be clung to or identified with in any way. This kind of follows logically from recognizing that things are in constant flux and that arising and passing is ungovernable. We come to understand more and more deeply that attempting to cling to something that is inconstant, ungovernable, and stressful, that doesn't make any sense, that it's futile and just creates more stress to try to do so. The more deeply we know and see this, the more deeply disinclined we are to cling and to crave, to identify with, or attempt to hold on to any of the conditions of this constantly changing world of our experience. And so for the first of these three characteristics, impermanence or inconstancy, there are a couple of different levels at which this contemplation can take place. First is on the conceptual level, where we're reflecting, we're pondering this truth of impermanence. And this can support the mind to orient to experience in a more skillful way. We all know that things are impermanent on a conceptual level, but we don't know it deeply enough for it to inform our perceptions and views such that we're not trying to hold on to things. And so in this vein, the Buddha gave a list that he called five subjects for frequent recollection. And four of these are about impermanence and ungovernability of experience. The first four are: I am of the nature to age, I am of the nature to sicken, I am of the nature to die, and all that is dear and pleasing to me will become otherwise, will become separated from me. So we know on some level that we will have to part with everything that we cherish. And yet we don't know it so deeply that we're not trying to resist that, or we're not trying to hold on. And of course, this is such a compassionate thing to align our hearts, our minds with this truth of impermanence, because things are going to change anyways. That is the nature of everything. And so much stress and suffering and pain comes when we are resisting this truth and trying to hold on and finding ourselves in distress and despair when things inevitably fall apart. And the Buddha said to keep our eyes wide open to this truth. And this will actually support the quality of our well-being in this life. Ajahn Chah, the great Thai teacher of the last century, he was a master of similes, and he gave the image of, he said, imagine that you have been sentenced to death and they're going to execute you in 7 days. How do you think you would be relating to the whatever thing you find yourself craving on a normal day, or find yourself bothered by on a normal day? You probably wouldn't pay much attention or give much mind to that, because you would know that things are going to be coming to an end soon, and that your attention would probably be on finding a way out, finding a way to arrive at some kind of peace. And he says, well, guess what? We are all sentenced to die. We just don't know when. For some of us, it could be in less than 7 days. Every day, many people die without having any idea that they are close to death. The Buddha said it was skillful to contemplate that in any given moment we could die before we finish this in-breath or this out-breath. So keeping this contemplation close and not just contemplating death, but of course looking back on our lives, how many relationships have come and gone? How many roles or identities have come and gone? Feeling like this kind of person in this situation, feeling like this kind of person in another situation, and recognizing that all of the abilities that we have, whether physical or mental abilities, that these will inevitably decline. All of this is subject to change. So all of the experiences you've ever had, where are they now? Every longing, whether it was fulfilled or went unfulfilled, every delightful sensual pleasure, where are those now? And do those past pleasures, do they bring happiness now? Is there some accumulation of well-being through gratifying craving? No, we can see that clearly not. No matter how many times we scratch the itch or go for the pleasant experience, craving will re-arise again. So every experience is of the nature to vanish. There's nothing we can hold on to. And so this is a supportive contemplation on the conceptual level, and yet the more potent practice, the way to actually uproot craving, is directly knowing and seeing impermanence in our moment-to-moment experience. So this is a meditative contemplation. In the Satipatthana Sutta, for example, one of the main discourses from the Buddha on the practice of mindfulness, in the refrain, the Buddha says that to abide contemplating arising and passing of all experience. So this is one of the central refrains in the instructions. Everything that we're aware of, to contemplate the arising and passing in moment-to-moment experience, recognizing that each moment of experience arises, is known, and vanishes. And the next moment of experience is something new. In the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha describes this leading to wisdom. He says that one dwells contemplating the rise and fall of the five aggregates, such as form, such its arising, such its passing away, such as feeling, such its arising, such its passing away, such as perception, such its arising, such its passing away. Such are mental formations. This is thoughts, intentions, mind states. It's a big category. Such its arising, such its passing away. And such is consciousness, such its arising, such its passing away. This is a cause and condition for obtaining the wisdom fundamental to the spiritual life. It's when we see the moment to moment arising and passing of our experience and all of the constituents of our experience. We really start to grok the utter ephemerality, the kind of almost inconceivable rapidity with which things are constantly changing, arising and passing. It's at this level that we must eventually come to understand and directly see this truth of impermanence and inconstancy. It's important to point out that you can't try hard to see impermanence. In fact, doing so will only obscure the recognition. But instead, kind of the beauty, the simplicity of this practice is that just by recognizing that in each moment, something is being known. So just noticing moment to moment to moment, what's here now? What's here now? What's here now? Whether that something is a sight, a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or something in the mind, like an idea or a mind state or an emotion or a state, even something like peace or calm or happiness. Whatever it is in every moment, something is being known. And if we sustain our attention, our recollection, keep in mind this recognizing that in each moment something is being known, we will eventually start to see this truth of impermanence. And we can incline our minds towards noticing this, as I pointed to gently in the guided meditation. Can incline our minds towards noticing each moment is new, each moment that something new is arising, and recognizing that in that what was known a moment ago is gone. This is in the Satipatthana Sutta, this noticing the arising and noticing the passing away. This leads to a deep disenchantment with the objects that are coming and going that we so deeply habitually try to cling to. And again, this understanding, this insight, when it's developed over and over and over and over again, it's not something that you see once and then you're done. It's something that we have to continually reinforce. And as this understanding more and more starts to sink in, it informs the way that the mind relates to all of our experience. And we cling and crave less and less and less. And the peace and ease grow and grow and grow until eventually there is an understanding, a liberating understanding that actually uproots craving and opens the door to the realization of a peace that is beyond anything that arises and passes away. This peace of Nibbana, this is a reality that is available to us at every moment where we can bring an end to craving and clinging, we can realize the truth of this peace of Nibbana. And all along the way, we can more and more learn to attune to and even delight in this flavor of peace, the subtle yet sublime peace or ease or simplicity, subtler and subtler forms of peace and well-being that are pointers in the direction of Nibbana. I'll want to read a brief passage from Ajahn Chah, the Thai master of the last century. He says, "Begin to examine the body and mind comprised of the five aggregates, material form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Examine these five aggregates as they come and go. You will see clearly that they are impermanent, that this impermanence makes them unsatisfactory and undesirable, and that they come and go of their own accord. There is no self running things. There is to be found only nature moving according to cause and effect. All things in the world fall under the characteristics of instability, unsatisfactoriness, and being without a permanent ego or soul. Seeing the whole of existence in this light, attachment and clinging to the aggregates will gradually be reduced. This is because we see the true characteristics of the world. We call this the arising of wisdom. Wisdom is to see the truth of the various manifestations of body and mind. When we use our trained and concentrated minds to examine these five aggregates, we will see clearly that both body and mind are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and essenceless. In seeing all compounded things with wisdom, we do not cling or grasp at them. Whatever we receive mindfully. We are not excessively happy. When things of ours break up or disappear, we are not unhappy and do not suffer painful feelings. For we see clearly the impermanent nature of all things." I see that we're at time, so I will continue this topic next week. And thank you all very much for your practice and attention. And may the goodness of our practice and our coming together, may it ripple out and be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all beings without exception be free. Thank you all. Take care.